hi, everybody. This is Dave Krueger. Welcome to the Early Birds. I wanted to do just a couple of introductory comments. If you registered early enough, you received the email from me asking a couple of questions. If we were to focus right now on what would be the most important thing that you'd like to take from this series, what would it be? And secondly, if you were to walk away in 4 weeks saying this is one of the most helpful seminar series ever, what would you walk away with? Now, those are kind of the same questions you ask of your coaching client every time, but it helps me to get an idea of what is of most interest to you, and those responses help shape some of my discussion. Because of that, can I get a management of the background noise? Anything you're doing is being picked up if you hit your mute button or star six, and then whenever you're ready to talk or ask a question or comment, hit it again, please. I can go on lecture mode, but I'd like to have a little bit of an open discussion at the beginning and the end if you'll manage the background noise. So we'll have a discussion at the beginning and the end of the series. I'll put us on lecture mode for you not to have to worry about this during the series. But anybody, and thank you for those of you who have already sent in responses to those two questions. Anything anyone wants to add or respond right now before we launch into our series? I see some familiar names. Welcome back. You realize the pressure that puts on me to come up with some new stories, and some of you have even joined from our last series about breaking the script. I welcome you, and from other series earlier this year, and some of the coaches I've trained in different ways. So I welcome that. Any thought or question or response before we move into the first seminar? And I'll explain more about that as I put us on lecture mode. Any question or comment? Or anybody want to say hi? Well, I welcome any responses that you have to those two questions. It'll help shape some of my responses, and I promise to work in ways to address those issues. So I'll put us on lecture mode, and I'll reserve a bit of time at the end for a discussion, for any clarification, and then I want to emphasize to manage the background noise, to stay on mute until you're ready to talk because of the number of people. So I'm going to put us on lecture mode, and we'll come back and have a discussion. So welcome to the Mind and Brain Coaching Mastery, the Art and Neuroscience of Change. In the first seminar, we'll review and integrate some important disciplines to develop a scientific system of mind, brain, and performance sciences for change and success. So the first three, the next three seminars, 2 through 4, will apply those principles to facilitate changes that last. So as you know, in strategic coaching, the hardest thing to do is to help someone make significant changes in their life or business story. Part of that is because so many of the methods to facilitate change are contrary to the way the mind and brain work. So that's why this series is, I think, important, because I think it'll help you understand more about how to integrate how our minds and brains work with what we do in strategic coaching. So in the last few years, we've seen revolutionary changes in our knowledge of the mind and brain and performance sciences that we can apply to strategic mentor coaching. These innovative new frontiers can be synthesized and integrated to help us become significantly more effective in our daily coaching interactions. The operating systems of our minds and brains are not fixed, but can be changed and transformed. We can rewrite mind software and rewire brain hardware to create new behaviors and new stories. We can engage in collaborative, co-created experiences to help clients with their personal and business stories. So, by integrating the mind and brain and performance sciences, we co-construct a new story with the client. We shift from problem to possibility, from teaching to experiencing, from telling to listening, from observer to participant, from educating to collaborating. So these foundation components make coaching unique from all other professions. So let's look first at our operating systems. Behavioral patterns, belief systems, especially from early on, even downloaded from parents, teachers, society, operate without observation or awareness. Neuroscientists estimate that about 90 to 95% of our behaviors and core beliefs are pre-programmed in the unconscious mind and operate on autopilot. And we only observe the derivatives of these processes as the behavior patterns, the beliefs, the experiences that our clients create, because they're unconscious. So what this means is that we can create two stories simultaneously that can go in opposite direction. The surface story is the one that's conscious. Our intentions, our aspirations, this is what I want from life. The shadow story that ghostwrites behavior can go in the opposite direction. And this includes limiting beliefs, the assumptions that don't work. I can't get what I really want. This system keeps me from doing what I need. I don't have what it takes. Whatever opposes that conscious, logical system. So here's an example. The surface story, I want to generate more income and create wealth. The shadow story, well, you know, I don't think I really have what it takes. Or some people were just born to have money. Or one other simple one. I want to be healthy and thin. And the shadow story is I want the cheesecake with the strawberry topping. So you see, I specialize in dual surface stories. So one of the first steps in working with clients with the brain in mind is to know ourselves really well, to know our own story and to have our own awareness in its creation so that we can know ourselves by developing first the capacity for our self-observation. Here's from Benjamin Franklin in Poor Richard's Almanac. There are three things extremely hard: steal, a diamond, to know oneself. So mentor coaching requires us to be insightful, reflective, self-observant, to have mindfulness of ourselves in order to be empathically attuned to the mind and experience of a client. So let's look at an overview first of contributions from different fields and then bring them together to apply in an informed strategic perspective for facilitating change. So this seminar will be more of an understanding, an overview of the mind and brain sciences. Then in the next three seminars, we'll look at practical, effective ways to be catalysts for change. So here are some contributions. First, from psychology and psychoanalysis. I hope you've seen the place to download, print the outline from the link you got when you signed up so that you can follow along and not have to write down a bunch of stuff. The recordings will also be placed at that same page, and there are four ports there for the recordings that will be posted the day following. So, first contribution from psychology and psychoanalysis. Empathy, the listening position from inside the client's experience, the subjective reality of how the client thinks, feels, processes, attributes meaning. and to help clients engage to be empathic with themselves so they develop the self-reflective capacity. Theory of mind, the ability to see the world from another's vantage point, essential for constructing a mental model of someone's thoughts and intentions in order to understand their behaviors and emotions a bit better. This is important for us as well, particularly. Neutrality. We, as coaches, remain equidistant from both sides of a client's dilemma if it's there, or their ambivalence, or their surface and shadow stories, not taking sides, not instructing or guiding or suggesting, but allowing the client collaboratively with us to resolve the issues. We'll come back to that. To learn from the old story, the past teaches the present, so not to repeat compromised parts of the old story. And we'll talk also in the application part about how we never have to ask why questions. We never have to look at origins of problems or past, that everything is going to be manifest in the process here and now. When an emotion becomes a foreground issue, especially if it derails progress, it needs to be dealt with first to regulate a state of mind so that the client has access to all the information in all of their states of mind. Regulating states of mind and managing emotion is a fundamental success strategy. We'll definitely come back to that. Another huge success strategy, understanding our own dynamics and the dynamics of others. Another that we get from the psychology field, the intersubjective third. Two people in a relationship create a third entity, the relationship. The relationship has the power to change, to transform. It takes on a unique life of its own. Everything in coaching occurs through the relationship. No matter what a client comes in with and consciously focuses on, the most important issues will manifest in the process of the relationship. This is where we earn our money. This is where we make our difference. To understand that 90 to 95% of the operating system that's not conscious. If it weren't for that, we'd be out of business. Positive psychology and emotional intelligence moved us to see health as much more than absence of disease, and to form a foundation of our focus on possibility rather than problems. Cognitive behavior therapy, currently the most widely used talking cure approach in America, says that it's not necessary or even important for someone to return to the origins of a problem in order to overcome it or write a new story. Rather, it's more productive to focus on the present and moving forward. Exactly what we do in coaching, to look at the choice architecture of this moment. Focus on the exception rather than the problem. This is called in neuroscience the bright spots. This was originally discovered in the 90s in a family therapy series of clinics in California that dealt with the most problematic families anywhere around, and they were all just feeling so stuck. And what they began to hear is that there was one issue that a family may have where the problem didn't exist. So what they did, instead of look at the problems and resolving, was to focus on the bright spot. And when they began to look at what was not the problem, that became the solution. So they focused on the positive aspects of how to replicate and strategically move forward with that. So a specific application from psychoanalysis to mentor coaching and change, transference is the repetitive ways of organizing current experiences based on past experiences. This is simply the organizing process of how we perceive, process, and attach meaning to people, and experiences. Transference simply means we use software that was developed in the past to read a current experience. Most of the time, that works terrifically well. Sometimes it can be very limiting. We'll return to that, too. This process used by the mind and brain is helpful because it allows us to see vast experiences quickly and read and respond to situations. And the times it may be limiting because the software is outdated, basically. The old story will get activated. It will come alive alongside the new story being created. In mentor coaching, we focus on the new story. We don't bother the old story until it bothers our client or us in the exchange. That is, we don't engage it. If necessary, we address the belief or the assumption of the old story just enough to inform a present choice rather than to continue to repeat the familiar one. This is how what's really important in how a client constructs a story comes alive in the relationship. Two kinds of memory are activated as process in a relationship, explicit or factual, and implicit, the procedural memory, like a relationship pattern, an attachment pattern. The coaching relationship will activate these patterns, including the old story, alongside the new story being co-constructed. This offers an in vivo opportunity to understand and address retranscripting behavioral and other attachments, thinking, feeling, perceiving. So this is the essence. Everything that's important for a client, every algorithm that determines thinking, feeling, behaving, will be activated in the coaching relationship. We get to see it in vivo, and that's where the working alliance, the collaborative framework with a client, can help us to help them understand how to perhaps revise or create a new way of proceeding. So this is a simpler version. A client is always teaching us exactly what it's like to be them. They create an in vivo demonstration of what needs to be known so that we can collaboratively look at it together. Here's an example. You're working with a CEO, this is a recent example, who is annoyed and alienated everyone in the executive suite. And that person was told, okay, you have one chance. We're going to send you to Kruger and see if any. And guess what? She began to annoy me right off the bat. She was exactly doing her job. She was showing me what it was like to be her. So my challenge was to develop a working alliance with her, a collaborative framework, so that we could look at that together and she could understand and revise in a more productive and effective and successful way. So this is how we can respond as coaches, different than everybody else in a person's life, to engage in a process of understanding and change. So we have to be open to that mutual reciprocal learning and not impart our theories. This is not about teaching or giving information. Each person has experiences and systems of meaning, places they need to begin in order to change and to collaboratively write an authentic new story. So, some contributions from neuroscience. In 1996, neuroscientists at the University of Parma in Italy noticed that the specific neurons that were fired when a monkey received a stimulus, the exact same neurons in the same place in the brain fired in the monkey simply observing that action. This revolutionary find, as late as 1996, provided a brain basis not only for empathy, but also for social connection. mirror neurons are not just specific cells, but are a function, a process of actual networks in different parts of the brain that reflect the behavior and feelings of others. So mirror neurons help us directly and indirectly imitate actions and create experiences. For example, it can be a simple, straightforward behavioral response. Stick out your tongue at a newborn baby, and the baby will immediately return the gesture. A baby smiles, and the parent smiles back. Mirror neurons are instrumental in acquiring empathy, language, social behavior. This mirroring activity explains how children download beliefs and behaviors beginning early on, before even there are words in a language. Later, for example, we experience and take in how our parents, for example, handle money, the behavior, messages, attitudes, biases, meanings, and regard of money. And how also our clients are always unconsciously taking notes from us and our exchange while we're talking about other things, how comfortable and confident we are in various ways, how we engage them in a collaborative, empathic way. Mirror neurons help us understand emotional and social contagion. If you see, for example, a person being poked with a needle, your pain neurons fire as if you were being poked. We unconsciously imitate what we witness, ranging from movement to behavior patterns, even to yawning. This is why, of course, nobody wants to sit next to me on a couch while I'm watching an action movie. Mirror neurons enable us to empathically understand, to appreciate another's point of view, and to see ourselves also as others see us. It's a form of self-awareness. Now, let's look at how this also works just as well by telephone as it does by video conference, as it does in person. At times, there may be distraction in video conference and in person that are not there. If you work by telephone, I've worked with 100% of my clients by telephone. And that means I have an international venue, but also we are purely focused on the work itself. Let's talk for a moment about the brain's error detection mechanism. Our brains can detect changes and send strong signals to alert us to something unusual. The error detection signals are generated in the orbital cortex right over the eyeballs and closely connected to the amygdala that registers emotion. So most of what we do every day is habitual, from how we get out of bed, shower, dress, drive to work, deal with challenges. The brain hardwires these behaviors to conserve energy. To change any of these habits takes more energy and begins with attention. We conserve energy by not investing attention to change. Even our physiology resists change. Things in the environment that are unexpected or different, anything other than what's normally expected, gets immediate attention. This is true with what we see and hear, as well as ideas. So this error detection mechanism explains a number of things. Why the media focuses on bad news, it gets our attention. Why we're problem-focused, it energizes us and activates the same pathway. Think about having a glass of Chardonnay on the patio with your buddies. How soon are you guys going to begin to talk about problems? Everybody's activated, but you know exactly where you're going to go. It's predictable. Why a road accident makes people stop and stare. Unexpected danger demands attention. Why people can easily name the things they do wrong and struggle to list their strengths. We notice difference more easily than confirmation. Our maps, our mind maps, include the beliefs, filters, values, patterns, hypotheses for how best to function in the world. These maps become an operating manual for our mental processes, even though we may not be conscious of most of them. Remember, 90 to 95% of things we don't have to think about. It's automatic. It's habitual. So here's a real practical application of this. A gap in performance has more to do with mindset, the state of mind, than with intelligence or motivation or deliberate practice and skill. In mentor coaching, this means that even when someone wants to change and is willing to change, the brain is triggered to be on guard when changes are introduced, and especially when they're enacted. Think about a simple application here is we are all tempted to tell a client what we think might be the best way to do it. And both client and coach want the coach to do this because it brings closure. There's no more dissonance, no more work, no more uncertainty. It brings closure. Now, never mind the client won't do it necessarily, but think of this when you suggest something to someone. Let's say you share a belief with someone else. Now, that person will immediately, not necessarily consciously, will determine if they agree with that belief. If they agree, they'll find a way to confirm it, confirmation bias. If they disagree with it, they will find a way to refute it. So either way, they're more entrenched in their original position than before you shared the belief or fact or opinion. This is confirmation bias. This is, in neuroscience, it's the boomerang effect, that somebody's more intrigued. And the more savvy they are, the more intellectually flexible they are, the more entrenched they will be in that original position. So this means in mentor coaching, even when somebody wants to change, is willing to change, their brain is automatically on guard. If changes are introduced, this is why we usually avoid giving advice in coaching. If the advice is unfamiliar or if it's a very specific advice, they're going to compare what they believe already. The resulting uncertainty can set off the error detection mechanism, or if they're familiar, they will find ways to agree or disagree and not really keep an open mind about it. So this is why questions are so important. The antithesis of giving facts, information, advice, to ask a question. During coaching conversations, we highlight or challenge a client's hypothesis. We distinguish concrete facts from created interpretation. These conversations can bring a client's map, what their assumptions are, into more conscious awareness to begin to consider together in a collaborative way. This is why the collaborative framework is so important as a beginning with every client, that you and the client together form a collaborative framework to engage the client's experience and to look as objectively as possible. So when someone reappraises or reframes, it can begin to create curiosity to look at other possibilities by examining these maps for the client, their fit for the current circumstance. Contrasting them to previous beliefs or statements can generate a kind of dissonance that in itself can create a motivation and assist change. This uses the error detection mechanism to assess and navigate change. So this burst of pleasure comes with the new connections of an insight or an aha experience. These moments of clarity in coaching, the moment of insight activates three different parts of a client's brain, and it vaults them into a state of mind that's more synthetic and integrative and creative. Consider same fMRI of the brain Giving facts, information, data, no part of the brain lights up. So we help clients improve their maps of the world and find ways to help their maps make sense by looking at what their experiences and beliefs are currently. We have to begin with where they are. So this is a summary then of what neuroscience teaches us about mentor coaching, and facilitating change. And this is all in your outline. People have prior knowledge that affects how they hear and respond to new information. Existing knowledge is the beginning of new knowledge. It's where our learning starts, simply because it can't happen in any other way. Here is an example of failed empathy. Many years ago, I offered what I thought was a really useful interpretation to an analytic patient back when I was practicing psychoanalysis. She paused and immediately said, "No, Kruger, first you've got to be with me before I can go someplace new with you." The most succinct supervision I've ever had on what we've just been talking about. Two, the prior knowledge is physical, real, and persistent as neuronal pathways in the brain. Neuronal networks, including beliefs and facts, are a physical reality in the brain. They can't be removed or bypassed or just overwritten by another fact. But it's an inside job to collaboratively create change. But you can't just present an explanation or a different idea and remove or bypass the existing network in the client's brain. Three, if we ignore reality, it will get in the way of new information and change. As we mentor, coach, and co-create change with a client, again, we have to start where the client is, not where we are. We can provide the tools for solving problems before they know what we cannot provide tools before they know what the problem is. Do this simple exercise. Some of you have done this before. On a sheet of paper, draw a large circle. Inside that circle, put a stick figure. That stick figure is your client. Your challenge is to get inside the circle. Outside the circle, client's not going to listen to you. Your challenge is to get inside the circle. Perhaps the best way of doing that is to resonate with the experience of the client and understand that so that collaboratively create a togetherness so you can go someplace new together. So this is why fixing or information doesn't work. Can't list the four reasons an idea is wrong. Expect it's going to rearrange anyone's network. So here's a more scientific way of saying that. If information were enough, we'd eat mostly vegetables, we'd work out every day, we'd be thin, we'd have a lot of money saved up for the future, and a lot of librarians would be billionaires. Four, partly because it's complex and personal, and partly because it's subjective reality, people are not always aware of their prior knowledge. Again, 90 to 95%. The operating system itself is unconscious as well as prior knowledge, beliefs. Since prior knowledge is concrete, actual pathways in the brain, we have to begin with a client with discovering prior knowledge and begin with where the client is. Again, we'll come back to this, but everything that you and the client need to know will be manifest in the process of the conversation, the interaction with you. Here are some contributions from quantum physics. Quantum physics helps us understand energy fields and adds how the activity of an observer affects what we observe. This is very close to what psychoanalysts call the intersubjective experience, how two people in a relationship creating a dialogue together create a third entity of the co-created experience. Quantum mechanics offers the notion of systems theory to understand a change in any one aspect of a system catalyzes change in the entire system. Think about when you've created change and introduced to your family, your company, your partner, and think about the pushback that you get. It's simply their error detection mechanism saying, wait, we need to get back to what's really right here. They are not necessarily opposing you. They're simply trying to help you self-correct. So what quantum physics teaches us about mentor coaching, the power is in the focus. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field. Focus selects a frequency. It's like all the channels of a radio or satellite TV are available. We choose the channel, the frequency we want, out of thousands of possibilities. We transmit and receive frequencies through our thoughts. If you want to change something in your life, change the frequency of the channel. Change your thoughts. The bad news, if you think about what you don't want, it will keep showing up over and over. Your unconscious doesn't know the difference between positive and negative. You get what you focus on. And here's a simple summary of that from Dr. Joseph Murray. Your subconscious mind does not argue with you. It accepts what your conscious mind decrees. If you say, I can't afford this, your subconscious mind works to make it true. According to quantum physics, we each generate energy frequency or vibrations. We project energy in our emotions and thoughts that are the source of what and who we attract, as well as the basis of our sense of well-being. The quantum Zeno, Z-E-N-O effect says, the mental act of attention, of just attention, activates and holds in place brain circuitry. With consistent focus and repetition, those chemical links actually become stable changes in the brain structure. This is how the brain rewires, by focus, by repetition. This concept can offer an explanation at a brain level for why solution focus is more effective than a problem focus. These brain connections literally become mind maps and subsequently influence the reality that we see. Many of you have heard me use this example, that simply, a very simple way of saying this is that our brains can't tell the difference between anxiety and excitement. The activation is exactly the same, registers in exactly the same. So how we frame it determines the mindset we use to boot up to deal with it. If we frame it as anxiety, it may boot up a mindset that says danger, better head for cover, it makes sense to stop or to avoid or protect. If we interpret it and frame it immediately as excitement, as opportunity, then that boots up a mindset that creates new neuronal connections and pathways. This is exactly what we do in coaching. The client begins, well, the problem here is, and this is where I will exercise my right that my permission, I'll say, that I ask every client, may I interrupt you at some point if I feel that it might be helpful for both of us to look at this moment. I will interrupt to say, let's look at the possibility here. So the problem is an already existing pathway in the brain. This is how people get stuck in therapy. They go down the problem pathway, look at all the kind of solutions, create new solutions, but it etches that pathway even further. Looking at problems creates new networks and new pathways. So new neuronal networks and pathways look at possibility, at solution. This is exactly what we do in coaching. So this is an aspect, it's the same with your energy field. When all of you is going in the same direction and focused, you have power. What are you doing with your personal energy field? Each moment, how you align and how you focus it. The paradox is that we don't attract what we want. We attract what we focus on. Everybody wants more money, so wanting is not the key to having it. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. Focusing on prosperity can align your energy to pursue possibilities here. So quantum physics offers us still another paradigm. In addition to our individual energy field, there's a collective field. And you can tap into and resonate with this field. Einstein called it the unified field theory. Basically, he said that we, as an individual, are a bundle of energy, and that we interact with someone else who's also a bundle of energy, and that creates a third entity, but those two energy fields interact. And this is the basis of social and emotional intelligence to some extent. This is also why that we interact with a group and the energy field of a group. A simple example. Every NBA team plays 84 games in a season, 42 away, 42 at home. Every team wins more games at home. Every team loses more games away. They have a collective energy field of positive support, by and large, at home games, negative energy field at away games. It seems to me a natural study. So here are some contributions from social psychology. And I promise in our last three seminars, we'll get to, yeah, but what do you do with that? We'll look at some very practical application. We're all embedded in vast social networks, friends, families, coworkers. Dr. Nicholas Christakis, a professor of medicine at Harvard, studied social networks. He followed 12,067 people for 32 years. He found that clusters of friends show an influence, a kind of positive contamination in the induction of various traits. If it's negative, obesity, unhappiness, drinking, smoking, exercise, or if it's positive, exercise, well-being, he shows that your location in the network impacts your lives in ways that you don't even know. An example, if your immediate circle of friends is obese, your risk of obesity is 45% higher. If your good friend becomes obese, it increases your chance of becoming obese by 57% in the same time period. If your good friend's friends are obese and you never have even met them, your risk is 25% higher. So what accounts for this? What might be causing this kind of contagion? One may be mirror neurons, that emotional attitudes, dispositions, states of mind, it occurs from brain to brain, amygdala to amygdala. Neuroscientists studied pairs of people using fMRI scans of their brains when they were interacting with each other. Their brain state and emotion of one is mirrored by the other. And here's a very practical recent study from Princeton. Used brain scans to find that when one person tells a story and the other who's in that conversation actively and empathically listen, their brain patterns began to synchronize. Their neural activity mirrors each other. If the listener suddenly fails to comprehend or disengages, their brain patterns immediately decouple. So here are a couple of contributions from Buddhism. Buddhism teaches us that when one area of the brain is engaged, other components will not be engaged. When we want to relax and stop thinking, we engage the right hemisphere when we stop talking and thinking. Further engagement of the right hemisphere occurs by focusing on feeling and experiencing the body as a unified whole. So this is related to the process of mentalization. Mentalization entails awareness of mental states in ourselves and in others, and that can be very helpful in working with a client. It involves awareness of mental states as someone experiences their thoughts, feelings, and their various perspectives. This process focuses on function rather than content. This non-judgmental attitude by us as mentor coaches of curiosity, open-mindedness, inquisitiveness, engages in a collaborative exploration. This is the essential framework with a client, a collaborative framework, meaning you and the client together are looking at understanding and going someplace new. The first step, getting in that circle with the client. Stress, overwhelm, excess emotion can hijack this process and impair self-awareness and self-regulation. So if somebody, for example, is actively engaging in action behavior, action symptoms like eating or spending or drinking to regulate tension, this is the antithesis of mentalization. One aim of mentor coaching of the relationship is to enhance this mentalization process. Our engagement with clients to enhance their awareness of their mental states in themselves as well as others can inform an understanding of their own dynamics as well as helping them understand the dynamics of others. Even the most entrenched thought and behavior patterns can be changed by this self-reflection and self-awareness. This process of change requires mentalization, meaning thinking about what you're thinking, and awareness of your experience and where you focus attention. So a growing body of neuroscience research confirms the power of examining the sequence of one's thought and internal dialogue, becoming an impartial spectator of your own mind and conversation. For example, examine the internal conversation. If you have a plan and don't follow through, as you get to the point of taking that step to engage your plan and stop, what's your internal conversation? Do you bargain with yourself to say, well, I'll begin next Tuesday? Or do you defy your own authority and say, ah, heck with it, I'm going to have a good time? Or do you, in some other way, just disengage from that and lose the focus on the plan? So pay attention to new ways of thinking and behaving. Even though uncomfortable at first, it can initiate rewiring of the brain. Focus attention on what's positive, on what you want rather than what is negative or what you want to avoid. Look for bright spots. Has there been a time in the past that you've engaged with a situation similar to this in a positive and successful way? Cultivate cognitive veto power, the focus and choice of stopping an impulse before you act on it. Map new possibilities. Reflect on both your expectations and values in order to align with your goals. So mindfulness is a mental mode of engagement in the present moment without evaluating or emotionally reacting to the situation. Mindfulness training strengthens the brain's ability to pay attention. It may be as simple as a one-minute mindfulness meditation, of pausing to focus only on your breath while you're relaxing your body, focusing just on your breath inhaling and exhaling. If you have a thought, which you will, this is your brain's job description, you let it go, let it float away, you're not engage it. Refocus on your breathing. This is also a model for use with your client. You focus entirely on your client's story. you begin to think about, well, you know, I know what better to do in this situation, or, you know, what's the best question to answer? Refocus on your client, just like you're breathing. Let the thought, let the suggestion and the recommendation, let it go and refocus on your client. The opposite of a wandering mind is a mindful one. Mindfulness training strengthens the brain's ability to pay attention. Learning mindfulness, the awareness and focus on the present moment, is an antidote to worry, rumination, and fear. Mindfulness to focus on the present moment without judgment has proven benefits for both health and happiness. There are recent studies that show if you follow a brief 1 or 2 minute mindfulness meditation with a specific gratitude, that gratitude, when that's done, it can enhance 2 different healthy immunoglobulins. Your immune system is strengthened by that gratitude. So, meditation, mindfulness meditation, does 3 things. It increases the number of neurons in brain regions that mediate attention, compassion, and empathy. It strengthens the immune system, and it provides psychological function of insight, creativity, and productivity. So, just briefly, some benefits of mentalization development. There's evidence to show that those with stronger empathic abilities can better predict the motives and actions and experiences and simply better understand and connect with others and can better regulate their own feelings, your own feelings and states of mind. People who can visualize or in some way consider their future selves can consistently choose to postpone impulses and engage productive activities. For example, Dr. Emily Pronin at Princeton recently did a study to show that people who can actually envision their future selves at like 70 and beyond save 2 to 3 times more for their retirement or their future than people who really don't engage or can't visualize their future selves. So, in one study, people who can envision their future selves can do various things from when this is an age progression software. Stanford did this. When age progression software can show where somebody will be in 20, 30, 40 years if they continue to smoke, if they continue to gain a few pounds every year. This can be a very vivid way of looking at a future self. So here's a summary then of science contributions. What each of these contributions offer is important to recognize as we integrate them with our work with clients. Psychoanalysis addresses coming to the end of the old story, but not how to strategically create a new one. Quantum physics recognizes the participation of the observer in the creation of reality, but omits motivation. Neuroscience illuminates the working of the conscious and unconscious mind, but it disregards the spirit. Psychology helps us understand the development of effectiveness and mastery, but is silent on brain contributions. What we can do is bring awareness from all of these disciplines together to apply and inform our strategic coaching to help our clients. So, asking the right question becomes more powerful than giving people the right answers. Appreciative inquiry can yield way better results than seeking and solving problems. So, what we do then, in summary, is collaborative, contingent conversations. The mentor coaching process is one of collaborative, contingent conversation. Collaborative in the sense that both coach and client make contributions to an ongoing interaction and co-creative conversation, contingent in that there's no agenda or script, but that each person is responding to what the other just said, and vice versa. And remember that conversation is not just the verbal interaction, but every channel of communication, overt, subliminal, all senses are involved, as well as personality, style, ways of processing, such as the neurolinguistic programming patterns of visual, auditory, kinesthetic, appreciating the personality, work, and performance styles of the client. There's an article I have on my website under the tab Articles called Toward Brain Hardware Optimization. My website is MentorPath, MENTORPATH.com. There's some articles there for coaches. So, as mentor coaches, we are ideally grounded, present, fully attuned to our client. In this collaboration and contingent conversation, it becomes focused on the client creating a new story, understanding their story, and looking at changes and the creation of new ones. We're wired to connect, to bond with others. When we strongly connect with another, the neurochemical system of oxytocin is released, the chemical of connection and bonding. This is the chemical that's highest at the time of childbirth to induce a connecting and bonding experience. The experience of connecting intensely with another human being is the antithesis of the stress response. And we'll talk about how important this is for beginning conversations in another seminar. So, new narratives in old brains. Here's where we need for a new story. We learn through stories. Stories are how we understand and how we remember, a way to hold information and make sense of things. Defense lawyers know this. Little kids standing next to broken vases know this. Stories create both personal mastery as well as connection to others. Marketers have figured this out, which is why we see so many stories in advertisements. So we're hardwired to connect and convert our lives into stories. Our narratives, the stories we tell about ourselves, describe and determine what we do. We become the stories we tell about ourselves. State-of-the-art neuroimaging and cognitive neuropsychology have demonstrated that we create ourselves, our sense of self, through narrative. Our left brain, to, you know, oversimplify it, specializes in personal self-narrating actions and thoughts. This interpreter function is the glue that keeps our stories unified to create a more cohesive sense of self. These language areas of the left hemisphere draw on memory from the midbrain hippocampal circuits and the planning regions in the orbital frontal cortex. So let's ask a simple question. Why can't we tickle ourselves? Because our brain contains specialized circuits that distinguish self and non-self, self-generated and external stimuli. This allows us to distinguish between self and non-self. A successful resolution to a compromised past story is to transform it by learning from it. We become wiser for it, more adaptive. We shift from repeating the old story to recognize, own, and assess our story here and now to decide what to change. When patterns are broken, new worlds emerge. And this is what we specialize in as mentor coaches, helping the client break their script. We extract the lesson from the past experience to write a new narrative in a new context. The new story overwrites the old story and then ultimately supersedes it in transformation. The past then can become memory, like our lap when we get up to walk, rather than an active intrusion on the present. But this is a process. displaces the memory on the library shelf in our mind as a choice to revisit if we want at will. We remember in order to forget. The story we use to guide our lives makes it easy to navigate, since our brains have created neurons and pathways for those old habits to make them default decisions and to conserve energy. They're like a latticework of little models. Our stories orient, guide, and instruct. The narrative we construct navigates our lives. So by recognizing, and we'll talk about this much more systematically, by recognizing, observing, and owning a story, a life story, a money story, a wellness, a career, a relationship, you can assess each component, each storyline, and decide what to change and map changes. You can then author new beliefs and then program the changes to transform your identity according to the new story. So next week we'll discuss states of mind and neural conditioning. I realize I've talked too long and we don't have time. I want to respect the time. If you have questions or comments, please feel free to email them to me, and I will begin our next seminar with those questions. My apologies that I didn't reserve time to have a discussion or clarification or questions at the end of this seminar. If you have responses to those two initial questions or anything you want to add or ask or clarify, please feel free to send me an email, and I'll wrap it into our discussion next time. So thanks very much. I look forward to continuing this with you, and we'll start with a brief discussion for our next seminar. Thanks so much. Have a great week. Look forward to picking up right here next time. See you guys.